You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome. Welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Buck, Calvin Butenoff, holding things down at Radio Park in Racine. Greg and I and Todd Alba, we are on the road. We are live from the EAA Museum in Oshkosh. You can join us. The museum is open if you're in the area. We would love to meet you. Stop on by. Now we have t-shirts, courtesy of Eliza. Thank you so much, Eliza, for bringing the t-shirts down. Oh, let me hit my applause button. We need one. I need one
need
at
that.
Home.
Just at your house?
Yes, I just want one at home. And Cassandra on the live stream says, well, now I'm definitely stopping by if mm-hmm. there's t-shirts.
Absolutely.
So come on by and pick up a WISS t-shirt, have some Kringle, have a cup of coffee, and hang with us here at the EAA Museum. Delighted to be joined by Hal Bryan. You are the emperor, we were told.
Yes. Yeah, there may have been something slightly lost in
slight
translation.
Missed there a little bit? A slight... fluffing of the title, perhaps.
Well, I know. I feel like I've been demoted a little bit. my working title, my actual title, is managing editor. So I work on EA's publications team year round, and we produce magazines and digital content. And next week during the big event, we'll do a daily newspaper every day.
Just wow,
a daily newspaper.
Yeah, I guess it's redundant to say it's daily every day, but it sounds like more work that way, doesn't it?
You got to remind people.
Right.
It's daily every day.
Yeah, they may have. Lost track between those words.
That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, does it show?
You're used to it. No, you look calm as a cucumber. Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the history of the EAA. And out of all the places in the world, out of all the airports in all the world, why did you come into mine? Why did you fly into mine?
Well, it goes back quite a ways, actually. So EAA founded in 1953 as a membership organization, starting with about 30 people, wanted to get together and share their passion for building airplanes, and then very quickly thereafter that grew into also restoring old airplanes, whether they were old military airplanes we call warbirds, vintage, things like that. Then it came time when the founders were deciding, hey, we need an annual get-together. So they did some things in Milwaukee for a couple of years.
Well, they did.
At Curtis Wright, mm-hmm. Now Timmerman Field,
right,
in Milwaukee.
Right.
Then in 1956, a guy named Steve Whitman, who was the manager of the Oshkosh Airport for many years, a notable air racer. We've got exhibits devoted to him here, and the airport is now named after him. He said, you know, Oshkosh has some interesting traits. You should come up here and give it a try. So 1956, the organization came up here. The weather was terrible. It just wasn't a great year, so they went back to Milwaukee. 1959, they kind of outgrew that, moved up to the out to the Rockford Airport in Illinois.
Really?
Oh, okay.
Rockford from 59 to 69, and then really, really outgrew that. So good old Steve Whitman came back and said, hey, why don't you take another look at Oshkosh? Mm. And it's got a lot of great things going for it. Number one, for an airport that doesn't have sort of scheduled airline service, although we did briefly in the 80s, the runways are really big.
Right.
It's a big property.
You can accommodate all kinds of aircraft.
All kinds of aircraft and large numbers of people. There was a lot of property around it. And one of the other key things is that our two biggest runways, which are 927, which goes east-west, 1836, which runs north-south, unlike most airports, they don't cross over each other.
Oh.
They're actually separate. So this is one of the... I can't name another airport off the top of my head. It's very uncommon. And that's what lets us accommodate so many airplanes coming in, mm-hmm. is we can have one whole, you know, major operation going on one runway while they're coming in, and we can accept arrivals on the other runway or departures going the other way. We can keep them totally separate like that. And... you know, that was somewhere between some really, really good foresight, and I also think a stroke of luck, because as big as it was when we came here in 1970, it's nothing compared to what it is now.
It has just exploded. My goodness.
It really has.
Dick was telling us, 600,000 people? That's astonishing.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's like, that. I mean, those are amazing numbers. And we've said it before, and we'll mention it again, the busiest airport in the world for 1 week. I mean, it's people coming. I have friends who have memories of coming here with their parents flying in, not just driving in, but flying in from all over the country.
Right.
And, I mean, it's this, you know, I have passed the EAA hundreds of times in my
coming
travels.
Up 41, right?
Yep, always yep. You pass it. I've never, this is my first opportunity to be here. And just in the museum alone, where we're at right now, is for me would be like, oh, that's enough for me. But to see everything else is, I mean, absolutely amazing. And all of the programs that are happening, I'm sure have grown over these decades upon decades. I mean, like, was it just, as you said, just people coming together and talking? When did the educational component come into the event?
That actually pretty early on. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, you start with, hey, let's get together because, you know, you're into this thing and I'm into this thing. Let's hang out and show off each other's airplanes. And it was really within the first few years that we started seeing people, you know, hey, I know how to do this. Maybe I know a little bit about welding or fabric covering or, mm-hmm. you know, sheet metal. Wouldn't have been composites and fiberglass back then. That wasn't until the 70s. But so we say, maybe I can set up a tent and I can teach people some tips and, you know, trade things back and forth. And it just grew organically from there. And that organic growth is really the secret, well, one of a thousand secret ingredients.
Seriously,
that made this whole thing.
Right.
You know, is if you set out today, you looked at what we do here. And in fact, we've had people from other countries, Dick can talk at length about this, that have come and said, okay, we want an air venture in our country.
Right.
So how do we make it? Well, start with 30 people and that are really enthusiastic.
Very passionate.
And, you know, wait 70 years and see what happens. I mean, there's, you know, we've got, I mentioned secret ingredients real quick.
Yeah.
I do have to say that the biggest secret ingredient, of course, is our volunteers.
Yes.
6,000 volunteers have made this happen. And we have some that are at least into their fourth generation in a family. And we're, you know, writing stories about them. And they show up, they realize how magic it is. They love it. They want to be a part of it. And they keep it going. And, you know, they could do it without us. We couldn't do it without them.
That's amazing. And it probably isn't a specific Wisconsin thing, but I think of the same thing with the State Fair. And there are people who have worked at the Cream Puff Palace mm-hmm. for 20 years, and their mother did, and their grandmother did, and they take vacation during that event just to work at the Cream Puff Palace because that's history. That's their family, and it sounds like the same thing here at EAA.
It absolutely is. I mean, we've had proposals here. We've had marriages here. I'm sure other family growth.
Maybe some heartbreaks happen. Involved. Well, in
probably
there.
A heartbreak or two here and there, but it is really really humbling. And I've spoken to volunteers over the years, you know, and they'll showing up here in maybe in March, and they start camping to work through the summer, and then you know they go back home in like November or October.
Really?
And so you know, I'm asking, well, you know. You know, where are you from? As well, we're in Florida or wherever they are. And I say, but if you're here more than you're there, this is home.
Yeah.
You know, when you leave here, you know, you're going somewhere else. And that dedication is staggering. It's humbling. And thank goodness it's infectious.
If you're just joining us, we are talking to Hal Bryan, who is the managing editor of EAA, also known as the managing overlord, as he has asked me to say.
Or emperor.
Emperor. You know,
saying any such too. Thing.
It's fine.
Viceroy, whatever he wants, we'll call him that. The question I have for you personally with this event, first of all, two parts. One, how long have you been doing it? How long have you been at EAA doing this event? And what are the things that you look forward to during the week?
Oh, wow. It's a terrific question. So prior to EAA, I was living out in Seattle mm-hmm. and worked for a company out there that was a sponsor and an exhibitor here. So I came out here once when I was 21 because I'm an airplane guy and this is the place to be. We flew
Definitely.
Out to Seattle.
Right.
Then about 10 years after that, I started coming every year with my company. So it became this thing I would look forward to every summer. And then 16 years ago, I was hired to come on out here and take a job initially working on some social media type things before I moved into publications. So it again, it's that sort of organic growth. It's mm-hmm. it's hard to say, but for me personally as an employee of EAA, it's been 16 years. You know, I'm a second generation pilot. I'm an aviation nut. This was a place, I mean, from the time I could talk, I would say, you know, hey, Dad, when were you going to go to Oshkosh?
Sure. Yeah.
Couldn't have told you where it was or what an Oshkosh was.
But I knew
I just
it was there.
Knew that this is the place that's synonymous with aviation. So, of course, I'm looking forward to all of that. But I have, I work, and this is going to sound hokey, but it's as sincere as could be. I work with the absolute best team in the business. And what I look forward to more than anything else is just we pack up, we grab our laptops, we leave our offices up here. We have a remote building down in the thick of things on the convention grounds. And we just work, you know, 19 days straight on everything. And we love every second of it.
That's how many jobs can you say that about? Honestly, though, that's a gift.
I mean,
that's really a gift.
That's not to be like sounding like a supreme suck up, but like that's how I feel about what we do here. It's like we work with great people. We talk about great things. We talk to have great conversations with individuals having a great impact on communities, and it's you feel lucky to do it.
Absolutely.
And the stories we hear about EAA. And the camaraderie and the fun. It sounds like summer camp for all ages.
That's a great way to put it. And, you know, that enthusiasm, Storf, it's not just staff. It's not just volunteers. Of course, it's those hundreds of thousands of people who come. And some of them, this is their vacation. They work
right.
every year. Some of them you might meet, this is their bucket list thing. They've wanted to do this their mm-hmm. entire lives. But everybody who comes here, it can be challenging to find a place to stay. It takes a lot of planning and
yeah.
stuff. It's not,
sure.
You don't just wake up one day and say, I'm just going to run over there a little
yeah.
bit. You work for it.
Yes.
But they want to be here so badly. And when you walk the grounds and you look into their eyes and you say hi to people and ask them where they're from and things like that, every single person is overjoyed.
Mm.
Overjoyed to be here.
What a great warm fuzzy.
Yeah,
totally love it.
It is. It's fantastic. We got a couple of minutes. I want to talk. You mentioned, again, the 6,000 volunteers with which this would not happen. Right. But I think, too, it's a great opportunity. Loneliness is a terrible epidemic in this country. We talk about it all the time. Mm-hmm. And it's people of all ages. It's not just older people.
Right.
It's all kinds of people. And I always think of things like this. And there's something you can volunteer for. You don't have to be moving planes around. That's not, you know, it doesn't have to be that. It can be helping people park. It can be all kinds of hundreds
right.
of things.
We've got we've got so many different groups of volunteers. We've got a volunteer center that's right on the ground. So if you just show up and you're here for a while and you think, hey, you know what? I'm looking for something a little bit different to do this afternoon. You can go up to the volunteer center
and just say, "I got hours."
Yeah, and they'll find something for you. I mean, you might drive a gator around as part of Operation Thirst and hand out drinks to the other volunteer stations. So, you know, you might make sandwiches. You might, as you said, you might park airplanes once you're trained to do that. You name it. It's every week. I have volunteers who come in and in fact, sometimes some young people who say, I really like writing in school. Could I write something for the newspaper?
Great.
Absolutely. Come on in. Have a
Great.
Seat.
Great.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Check out the volunteer tent if you're coming up to the EAA. Mm-hmm. I'm going to come next week just so I can drive something. I just want to drive a golf cart or something. I'll find something for me to do. We're going to continue our conversation with Hal Bryan. We are here at the EAA Museum. Come on out and join us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B, holding things down from Radio Park in Racine. Greg and I on the road along with the Todd Alba Show. We are here live at the EAA Museum in Oshkosh. EAA Air Venture really gets underway. It kicks off on Monday officially, but there's all kinds of activity already going on. We got campers out in the field, and Hal Bryan is our guest as we continue to talk about the EAA. We wanted to talk a little bit, Hal, about the incredible economic impact that the EAA has on the Fox Valley and Oshkosh.
It certainly is remarkable. And, you know, we were talking before when I was a little kid. It's like I didn't know what an Oshkosh was. I just knew
right.
it was the airplane.
I want to go there.
To. But when you realize that in our world of aviation, you can quite honestly go anywhere in the world and find somebody who's flying an airplane. And even if you don't speak any of the same language, if you say Oshkosh,
They know.
They will absolutely know. I know that sounds like marketing hyperbole, but it's absolutely the truth. So when you realize the scale of it on the world stage, in that somewhat niche world of aviation,
right.
It's, you know, I mean, it's far and away the biggest thing of its kind. And, you know, for the last maybe 3, 4, or 5 years ago, there was a formal study that was done that estimated that with just all the people coming in and, you know, the local restaurants and buying gas and lodging.
Hotels,
and
all that stuff.
All that kind of stuff. You know, the number was estimated to be about $170 million.
Wow.
Brought into the Fox Valley. And I have heard that a new report just came out, and as we were discussing off the air, Jane, I'm reluctant to sort of be quoted on this, but if I heard correctly, the most recent number has been revised to something closer to $250 million.
That's massive.
But when you, it really is. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely staggering, but it's, when you see the size of it, it starts to make sense.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's fascinating to see that impact on, you know, on the community and the area. And you've got, you know, some people who absolutely love it because their restaurant is full all week and everything else. And you got other people who say, you know what, I'm going to go up north.
I'm leaving town.
Yeah.
And they rent their house.
Yeah.
And that's
a huge
thing.
Oh, I bet a lot
thing.
Of folks do that.
And we've been doing that here. It's like now we've got, you know, Vrbo and Airbnb and stuff like that. It actually makes it a lot easier. But, I sort of joke that we were the first at that because it's been a thing for,
for so
40,
decades.
50 years. Yeah.
I've been Airbnb my house since the 70s.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're sort of lodging share hipsters.
There
you
go.
We were into it before it was cool.
Like Al Gore invented the internet. You invented Airbnb. You heard that here first.
We'll give him that, yeah. Sure.
I don't know how to argue that.
Hal, I wanted to also ask you, because I asked Dick this question off air, but, you know, this event is all-encompassing. You're planning it all year round. And it's not just starting next week. It started on the 27th when people lined up to get their camping spots.
Right.
So there's a lot of energy. Once it's done, last volunteer is left. It's the essential staff. What are you, Hal, personally doing to wind down after such a long event?
So we talk about around the office about the post-air venture blues, and that's a real thing.
Yeah,
I bet.
You know, because you've got, there's so much intensity and so much clarity of purpose. You know, every second, if you're awake, you're doing something for the event. And then when it stops, a number of things happen. First of all, your mind and your heart say, you know, okay, hey, we just figured it out. We just got going, or we're in a rhythm. Let's do another week.
Yeah.
And then your body has a very different response to that.
No, we're not doing another week.
Yeah.
And so my first thing is to head home, you know, get a hug from my wife, face plant onto the couch.
Yeah.
And just take some breaths and everything else. And then that first Monday, people would sort of automatically assume like everybody takes the week off. But we don't. We actually have to keep working. And I've got a magazine
that you got to get out.
That's due, going to press in a week or so. So we've got to hit that. But that Monday morning, we come in a little late.
Yeah.
We go down to the grounds. We pack up our computers and stuff. We bring them back up to this museum and office complex, get ourselves sort of going again. Then when we go out to lunch, we stare at each other, laugh a little.
Yeah.
And then I have the privilege of telling everybody, you know what? Don't go back. Just
go home.
When you're done with lunch,
done.
Go home,
that's
take
great.
A nap.
We're done.
And the rest of the week, we ease back into it.
Real briefly, Sue from Franklin texting in. She says, our good family friend Doug Ward was a World War II vet that was there all the time. Hal, do you remember Doug Ward?
Oh, I remember Doug very vividly. He was just a terrific, terrific guy. And, you know, one of our greatest generation, you know, on whose shoulders we all stand. And Doug was a ball turret gunner on a B-17 in World War II. We have a B-17 that we've flown and give tours and rides to help, you know, the veterans experience those things. And now with so many of those veterans gone, as is Doug, may he rest in peace, it's the families and things like that. Now we're operating a B-25 kind of in its place. We have... might still be in the museum somewhere behind me, although they may have moved it already. We usually have a standalone ball turret that would be in our member welcome center.
Oh, yes.
And Doug saw that on display. And as I remember, he walked in there and said, oh, I used to do that. Oh, really? And the next thing you know, he's got a crowd around him, and he's explaining, you know, how you'd climb in.
Oh,
and,
how
and
interesting.
Horrible conditions. You're 30, 40,000 feet. It's 20, 30 below zero.
Yeah.
You're crammed in there. You can't see. You can't hear. You can't communicate with anybody. And by the way, there's a literal army of Nazis trying to kill you.
Yeah, they're shooting at you, by the way.
And all of that. So his stories were absolutely priceless. And thank goodness that his partner, Judy Ohm, put together, worked with Doug on his book. I believe it's called Turret Tales. And I know that she's still out there keeping that legacy alive and keeping those stories going because, you know, we're almost out of World War II veterans at this point, just by longevity.
Yep.
And we cannot forget what they did.
Come visit the EAA. Hal Bryan, thank you so very, very much for your time and all your dedication to this. It's fantastic.
I appreciate you.
It's truly my pleasure.
We got news coming up next and then audio sorbet. We're going to lighten things up and talk about how do you fly?
Mm-hmm.
That's all coming up. Stick around. You're listening to Matt and Air on the Civic Media Radio Network live from Oshkosh. Don't go away. Good morning. Welcome back to Matt and on Air. Jane Matt and Air, Greg Bach, and Todd Alba coming to you live from EAA. We're in Oshkosh at the EAA Museum. Calvin holding things down at the Fort at Radio Park in Racine. But it is our summer road trip with Matt Nair on Air and the Todd Alba Show. Today is day number one on the road. What wonderful people to talk to about this event. Dick Kapinski and Hal Bryan, who are just our guests. And you're going to have some more folks from the EAA on later on this afternoon.
Yeah, it's Lukester is Luke Mathers has helped line us up. Todd Michael started it. It's like a relay race up here. We have great people to start.
Pass the baton.
Appreciate both Todd and Luke helping us line these folks up. I've just enjoyed sitting here listening to you guys talk to people. I can't wait till this afternoon. We talk to some more people kind of focusing, picking up where you guys left off on the youth and what's going on, how more young people. I'll talk more about it later on this afternoon, but was it four years ago that my friends who are the parents of my two godsons, we came up here with the godsons. My favorite youngest, as I like to say, graduated from UW with aerospace mechanical engineering
degree.
Oh,
no kidding.
And he was inspired by coming up here, and he now works for Department of Defense out at Naval Air Force Base or at Naval Base in Bremerton and does sound vibrations. And he actually did a co-op just down the street for a semester at Oshkosh Corp, where he learned a lot about vibration technology and that sort of thing. So this event can really inspire young people. Some are going to go directly into aviation, but some are going to go into professions that are deviants or
adjacent.
Guys like to say, adjacent. Aerospace adjacent.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I mean, again, and that's why I think if you're listening and you're like, well, we've never been there, and I don't know. I think you should come. I think you will change your mind once you get up here and take advantage of some of the things that they offer. They have all kinds of classes. They have all kinds of symposiums.
1,400 different discussions, they said.
Yeah, it's a great event. We're going to include, obviously, all the links to the EAA and EAA Adventure after the show is over. But right now, this is the portion of the program that we call Audio Sorbet.
Do I hear them all the way? The harps.
Audio Sorbet, where we take a break away from the news and just talk about silly things, because otherwise we're going to lose our minds.
And that's why they brought me on for this portion of the show.
Sillier silly.
And by the way, let me thank my friend and colleague, Jay Matinair. I have brought along my Yeti reusable water container
with me. It's a great thing.
Thank you.
I want to thank my friend Jay Matinair for this dang dingy cup of stained
paper.
Coffee.
It's paper. You can recycle it.
Thank you.
Fine. Christmas is coming, all right? You get one for Christmas.
Oh, thank you.
Audio Sorbet today, since we are here at the EAA Museum, we just thought we would talk about how do you fly?
Mm-hmm.
So what is your routine? I think for those of us who have done traveling with any regularity, there are certain things you take in your carry-on so you have access to it when you're flying. Maybe certain outfits. Maybe you wear certain clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You want to be comfy.
Yeah.
How do you fly is our audio sorbet today. Don't say with your arms. 855-752, because you were thinking it, weren't you?
I know.
855-752-4842. How do you fly? You can text and or call or leave a message on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Greg Bach, we'll start with you.
It always depends on... where I'm going, like how much I'm packing. So like I always want to be as light as possible, even just in traveling. So like I take, you know, I try to pack in the smallest bag possible. I try to pack just an overhead, like a carry-on, if I can do it.
Right.
If I can't, then I pack a bigger bag, and then I'll check it and whatnot. But before my world of TSA pre-check, which is fantastic.
It is.
I would, if the weather was correct, if I was flying somewhere warm, I would fly in shorts. I would arrive in the airport in shorts, T-shirts, usually either flip-flops or slip-on shoes, so that way I was sailing through security as quickly as possible, because there is that inherent anxiety you feel when you're trying to, first you're trying to take the belt off, take the shoes off, laptop, bag, all the things, and you try to get through, and God forbid they beep or they say, got to go through again. And then once you make it through, then you got to put the belt back on, put the shoes back on, and then all those trays are like cramped, like slapping into yours.
And then people start looking at you.
I just want to get through and be as little a problem for people. I'm so Midwestern that I need to be as little an inconvenience to others as possible. And when I'm flying, I want to be just the easiest person to go through. And now I have TSA pre-check, so it's easier. But now, as we talked about last week...
Well, now you don't have to take your shoes off anymore.
You don't take your shoes off. Apparently, it's no longer a problem. I would say it hasn't been a problem for a long time, but whatever. I'm not government. So, yeah, I try to just fly as easy peasy lemon squeezy as possible. What about you, Todd?
Well, I usually try to put a quarter or a piece of metal in my pants, hoping for a pat-down. So that's usually what I'm hoping.
We're not talking about Kretlow.
No, exactly. When I go through in TSA, I agree. I try to fly. I always feel weird flying in shorts, but maybe that's just me. I don't know. I try to. Now a lot of places it's more expensive, right? To have to check a bag, and so you try to use the carry-on.
Right.
That's one thing. I do kind of like the new. See, I'm one of the holdouts. I'm the analog guy living in a digital world. I still like the paper boarding pass.
Yeah.
But I have occasionally used the electronic.
Oh, scanner. I always use the pass. I do that. I mean, I always have my. I never print a pass.
So, but I'll tell.
Yeah, go ahead.
I've tried Spirit Airlines while I was flying to El Salvador a lot.
Yeah.
And literally their slogan is "Your ass and gas." That's Spirit Airlines. That's their slogan. because there's no frills on Spirit. And it gets a little, dicey there, because like the seats never don't even recline at all and you get nothing.
But seatbelts? That's $50.
Yeah, pretty much. But I will say a couple of times when I checked in, has this ever happened to you guys, where I bought my regular coach seat and I'm checking in and it pops up on the screen, "Would you like to be upgraded to first class for
another $50?
$75.
Yeah.
And I have a couple of times said, "Yes, please." And oh my goodness gracious.
Wait, Spirit has first class?
No, not Spirit. But I'm like Delta United, something like that.
See, I always fly with an airline that rhymes with Pauspest. And they don't have upgrades like that. And now the thing is they're charging for bags.
Right.
They're charging for bags, and that was one of the...
Well, the one advantage they have.
Yeah, that was one of the...
They just got rid of.
Our international traveler, Jane Matinair, you're an experienced traveler.
Yes,
Jane
you Matinair. Are.
How do you fly?
The one thing that I have to take is I have one of those blow-up pillows.
Oh, the thing that goes around your neck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
not like on the movie Airplane, that's something different, but a blow-up pillow.
Different blow-up.
Very good.
Just to specify. Where's...
There it is.
It's a foul on Todd Oliver right there.
Oh, did you just comedy sports brown bag him?
What a
reference.
Absolutely. No, I have to have something. I don't know. I watch people who fly and they can sleep with their head on their chest. I don't know how you do that.
I don't. You can. It's kind of easy to fall asleep like that. But then you wake up and you are in a mountain of pain.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done the thing where I'll actually put the tray down in front of me and put my blow-up pillow on it and then lean on that. But that's only so comfy for so long, too.
I just rest my head on the window. I'm just like this is how I'm going
to
sleep.
But I gotta have my little blow-up pillow, as opposed to the foam ones, which I don't understand. That they need their own suitcase. Those are the ones that are fabric.
Yeah.
It's like, you bought that?
Right.
You bought that.
Window or aisle?
Window.
Me too.
Window.
Yeah, my wife and I used to, when we would fly together, she doesn't ask for a lot in life. She's a very giving and very supportive person. So I always be like, just take this. She'd be like, do you want the window this time? Like, just take the window. Now what we do, especially with Southwest, we just get our own aisle so we can both have window. Because we'll both most likely be asleep or just listening to something. So we don't really need to communicate. So I much would rather have a window. I just feel comfier and safer next to the window. So now we're just like, you know what? We've been together long enough. We
don't have to sit together.
Yeah, it's not something that has to. And we usually sit like behind or in front of, and we'll just like put our hand back and give a high five and whatnot. And that's, but yeah.
Hello, honey. Yeah. How you doing back
that's
there?
That's what you call compromise.
How do you fly?
How do you
is
fly?
Our audio sorbet topic of the day at 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We ask because we are on day one of our Matt and Air on Air Todd Alba show summer road trip. And we are in Oshkosh at the EAA Museum. The EAA Air Venture itself kicks off this coming Monday. Mm-hmm. Cassandra on the live stream says, we wear comfy clothes and pack an extra set of clothes in our carry-on in case the luggage gets lost. I always do that, too. Or this winter, we chose just to drive instead of fly with two young kids.
Yeah.
And I do always want to applaud the people with children who are well-behaved.
100%.
And I feel so badly for the ones I don't know what you do if you're a parent. I don't know what you do.
And that's the thing is, like, I remember going, the one time I flew overseas, there was a woman with her baby, and the baby was crying. And I could have easily been annoyed, angry, or you know, we see videos all the time go further than that. But at one point, I just realized, the baby doesn't have a decision in this matter, and the mom can't stop it. They've got to just let the baby. So just accept it. It's going to happen. And if anything, I felt a great deal of sympathy for the mom because you know the whole plane is looking at her.
Oh, yes, and shooting daggers at her, too.
I always thought bourbon helps.
For the baby or the mother?
Both. that'll quiet people. So
Child services. He's here right now.
I mean, AirPods. The noise canceling.
Oh, absolutely.
AirPods.
Yeah.
They have AirPods that are noise canceling.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah. I don't do the pods myself. They fall out of my head. But I have a pair of really nice noise canceling headphones. And when the noise canceling comes on, it's like a shoom, and it's silent.
Yep. That's
sometimes
nice.
Sometimes I'll be at work doing work, and I won't even listen to anything. I just want to hear nothing, or I get distracted. So, yeah, noise canceling is one of the greatest inventions.
Yeah, he does that in our meetings.
I was saying, the meetings, we never hear from Greg.
Greg never responds when we're like, Greg, what do you think about this?
Greg goes to the meetings, unlike me.
The great contributions of Greg Bach. Yes, indeed. You're welcome, everybody. Okay.
Sue from Franklin texting in, Greg, we are the same after 35 years. We don't need to sit next to each other on the plane anymore.
Yeah.
We usually get aisle seats.
Yeah.
Across from each other. Yeah, I don't quite. If you're flying with small children, I get it. But I don't understand that I need to be with my spouse.
Yeah.
If I'm flying somebody out, like family or whatever, at least you got one side you can, like, lean against each other. And,
a little
you know
more,
I mean?
Yeah, you have a little more.
Oh,
grace.
No, I lean next to a side. Just a stranger next to me, head on their shoulder. You have to deal with it.
And who's going to shove him off your shoulder?
Right, no, nobody.
Yes, yeah, right.
Right.
I've earned this.
Because Greg's a very, very nice man, but he can look, you know, anger if he wants to.
You could scare.
Quick question, since the pandemic or even before, do you guys use, like, do you carry wipes with you or disinfectant stuff to do, like, the tray?
No.
I want to say yes, but I don't.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
I still carry duct tape in case I have to, if I have to duct tape a fellow passenger to their seat.
Do you really?
No, but I'm going to start.
Do they let you bring it on there anymore?
Duct tape?
Yeah. Can you bring duct tape?
I want
a large stick from El Salvador for driftwood. They'd never let you do that. No.
Well, I can see why they would do that. Now I'm going to try. Now I'm going to bring a roll of duct tape the next time I fly, just because I'm curious. Okay, stay with us. We are going to wrap up the show with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Let's have a snack edition. Don't go away. You are listening to Matt and Air on Air on the vast, statewide, countrywide, pick us up global on the app, baby, Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matinee on Air. Jane Matinee, a silent Greg Bach, and a bound Don Alba coming to you live from the EAA Museum here in Oshkosh. We were talking about duct tape before.
Take the duct tape.
All we're missing, all we're missing is Brittany Merlot and a forecast about whipping winds.
That would be a whole different show.
Wait, do we have a hot button on? That works. That works.
Just another foul. Another foul. We are here at the EAA Museum. Air Venture gets underway on Monday here in Oshkosh. And thank you so much to Dick Napinski and Hal Bryan who joined us. Todd is going to be doing his show from here later on this afternoon, starting at 2 o'clock from 2 until 4. So if you're in the Oshkosh area, the museum's open.
Come on in
and say hello. We have some great Oshkosh WISS t-shirts. Thank you, Eliza, for bringing those by. And Kringle.
And Kringle and coffee,
all kinds of things, yes. Also, I wanted to just do a little shout-out. We were talking about how do you fly before we took a moment. Ronnie from Horicon says, I fly with as little as possible and with a few Xanax.
There you go.
There you go.
Yep. There you go.
And Ben from Oshkosh. Todd and Jane and Greg, if you find yourself wandering around Oshkosh tonight, check out Deb's Spare Time. I'm bartending 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. Ben, we would absolutely do that if we could.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, after Todd's show is done at 4 o'clock, we got to pack up. We got a long haul to Butternut.
Yep.
We had a long, it's like a 3.5-hour drive. But we will be landing in Butternut, and then tomorrow we're broadcasting from the Fanatical Fish Gallery.
Yes, indeed.
In Butternut. Kelly Meredith is the owner, and she's going to join us.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Looking forward to that. All right, it is getting late, Calvin, 10:54. That means it's time for...
This shouldn't be a thing.
If you ever have a thing you think should not be, send it into Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. This is from CBS. Calvin found this one. The headline reads, no one wants this byline. Billions of flies to be dumped out of planes in an effort to fight flesh-eating maggots known as man-eater.
What?
Hall & Oates could not be reached for comment.
The U.S. government is preparing to breed billions of flies and dump them out of planes over Mexico and southern Texas to fight a flesh-eating maggot. It might sound like a horror movie plot, but it is part of our government's plan to protect the U.S. from this particular bug that can devastate the beef industry, wildlife, household pets. Edwin Burgess, an assistant professor at University of Florida who studies parasites, says this is exceptionally good technology. It's an all-time great in terms of translating science to solve some kind of large problem. The targeted pest is the flesh-eating larva, the New World screwworm fly. U.S. Department of Ag will ramp up the breeding and distribution of the adult flies. Then they're going to fix them before they release them. Bad news, guys. And they mate, but the eggs do not get fertilized. So they're foiled.
They're foiled,
as it were.
We're going to get them in a nice, comfy position. We're having fun and just get them out there. I just imagine someone with a big box that just says flies and just dumping it out of a plane. Just like, there you go.
Get that door.
Yeah, exactly.
The USDA expects a new screwworm fly factory. I'm not making it up. I'm just reading it.
A screwworm
fly factory to be up and running in southern Mexico by July of next year. It will open a fly distribution center in southern Texas by the end of the year so they can import and distribute flies should that become necessary.
Order them on Amazon, whatever, Alibaba, however you want to get your flies. We'll get them to you ASAP.
It seems that something could go terribly wrong here.
Doesn't it, though?
Yeah, right.
It does.
A new Jurassic World movie or Jurassic Park or whatever, a dinosaur movie just came out. And every time I see one of these movies come out, I'm like, this is just another story about humans not learning their lessons. And this, to me, seems rife for that valuable lesson.
In the 1950s, scientists put the flies in paper cups and then dropped the cups out of planes using special parachutes. Later, they loaded them into boxes with a machine known as a whizpacker.
I don't.
This is the first time I'm reading this.
A whiz packer.
A whiz packer. The method is still much the same this time around. Light planes with crates of flies drop the crates.
But this year we've got the technology. We're going to strap tiny parachutes to the flies and drop them.
And little cameras.
Exactly. And we'll be This would be a movie if it wasn't real, and it's hilarious. What was it? It was Screw Worm
Fly Factory.
Screw Worm Fly Frack. I can't even say that. It's just very difficult to say.
I don't know that we can top this week.
It's incredible.
That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Oh, boy. So many people to thank for making this possible. Thank you, Todd Michaels. Thank you, Lisa Hale. Thank you, Todd Alba and Luke Mathers. Greg Bach, Eliza came by. Thank you so much for your help. We have a whole bunch of people we'll be thanking over the next couple of days. It takes a village to get something like this to happen. Mm-hmm. So we really appreciate everybody. Thank you, Greg and Calvin. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It does mean the world. I hope you find some joy today and you get the chance to share it. We got news coming up next. Tom Hartman from 11 to 2. Todd Alba will be back from 2 to 4.
Oh, baby.
And then Maggie Dawn, 4 to 6. Pete Schwabba, 6 to 8 p.m. We will be back tomorrow morning starting at 9 o'clock from Butternut.
The Fanatical Fish Gallery.
My second favorite place I have never been.
Bucket list checked off.
There it is. All right. Thank you so much. Keep it right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.